It sounds like you're not coming back as Kokomoy.
Oh no, I don't resonate with her. And maybe that's why I'm struggling to go back to her platform. I feel like I need to open a new page.
Because she's someone else.
She's someone else. I don't resonate with her.
I remember the day when I left church. Maybe not the exact day, but I remember the moment. I remember the last sermon. Yeah. It was a white preacher talking about how African masks that he had seen at a market were dwellings of evil spirits. Yeah, I know. What was I doing there? But in my defense, it was a campus ministry church, and they had a live band, and I came from Kokasi. I had never experienced a band before. Anyway, it wasn't the sermon that made me leave church. That sermon was just stupid. I mean, it came from a guy who said that his wife cuts out any ads of lingerie in magazines just in case he gets led astray by beige bras at 20% off. So my leaving church was years in the making. It was a huge complex of things, and after that, I didn't want to believe in anything. I wasn't an atheist or anything, but I had no theories. I was just tired. I was tired of the question that I couldn't find answers for, and too much didn't make sense. I spent a ton of time in Bible study, but man, some things about Christianity simply were not adding up. The thing that happens when you leave a belief structure that has been a way of life for you since birth is that it creates a deep and pervasive sense of doubt. You walk away with a tangible sense of mistrust. And it's not a mistrust just of the institution that you have just left, but it's a deep mistrust of yourself. You just don't trust yourself and your sense of judgment. Years later, when I went for my first consultation with a sangoma, I didn't go because I necessarily believed in ancestors or amadlozi. I went really out of curiosity and a nagging question about dreams that I was having at the time. That consultation led me to more questions, and I kept following those questions. And before I knew it, I was knee-deep in African spirituality before I even viewed myself as someone who practiced the belief. It wasn't long after that my sense of doubt crept back in. How do I know that I'm putting myself in another situation where I'm going to spend half my life practicing something that I will eventually end up not agreeing with anymore? What if it only makes sense now because of all of the hype, but in reality, the whole thing is just a hallucinated superstition? When I embarked on wanting to understand African spirituality, I made a deal with myself that I would always ask questions. I took this decision as a kind of a fail-safe, like an automated braking system that would kick in if I was going way too fast and way in too deep into this belief system. And I was confident enough in that process that it even compelled me to start an entire podcast. But while the podcast was really fun to put together, behind the scenes, it has been wreaking havoc in my life. And instead of adding up to my knowledge, what the podcast was doing was that as I was learning, it was slowly hacking away at my understanding. This dilemma was beautifully summed up in a quote by, I think it was Socrates or something, who said, "The more I learn, the less I realize I know." In my interactions with people over the duration of this podcast, I've had conversations with many people about African spirituality, and I've done a lot of research. And to be honest, there are still a lot of things that simply don't add up. There are a lot of things that simply didn't click for me. And on top of that, life keeps throwing experiences at you, and on the surface may seem aimed at strengthening your belief, but in reality, it feels like they're just making your belief weaker. So what do you do when you reach that point where you begin to doubt your journey, when somehow things are simply just not adding up? Not in the occurrences, but in your understanding of what is it that is happening to you. For this question, I reached out to Ugogo Moyo, who needs no introduction on this podcast. And I also have to add a disclaimer that Ugogo Moyo was the very first Sangoma I consulted with way back in 2012, 2013. And since then, she has built a juggernaut of an online presence, with one of the biggest YouTube channels related to African spirituality in the country, in my opinion. From 2015 onwards, she was one of the go-to healers that TV programs, radio shows, and online platforms, as well as print platforms, went to cover topics that had anything to do with African spirituality. She had a following of literally thousands across all her platforms. Then one day in 2021, Ugogo Moyo just vanished. All her platforms and pages went dead. At first, it was for a couple of weeks and a couple of months. Then a whole year went past. As it normally happens sometimes with social media, when I see a popular personality disappear, there are all sorts of questions and rumors that begin to spread. But for me, when I realized that she hadn't posted for over a year, the very first thing that came to my mind was a paradigm shift. The reason I thought this was because I had seen it happen with a few other people that I had followed online who specialize in topics around spirituality. Some of them go through a process where seemingly they have to reevaluate how they express their beliefs or their relationship with their beliefs, especially in terms of how they express them online. But unlike YouTubers and TikTokers who get hooked on the hype of creating content for content's sake, then crash out and burn, those who are sincere and genuine in their spiritual journeys that they share online seem to go through some kind of a sabbatical, I think. Some form of process that some may or may not share about later on. Something in me kind of told me that Ugogo Moyo had gone through or was going through something like that. Well, I think at the very least, I was hoping that she did. When she reappeared again earlier this year, I knew that there was a conversation to be had about what it is that she had gone through, and I was sure that it would be an insightful conversation, and anyone who finds themselves in a process where, or in a moment where they are having to reevaluate or go through some profound change in their spiritual journey would be able to relate to this conversation. So the funny thing is, when I was thinking about the conversation, thinking back on the conversations that we had, was how initially your journey was sort of happening backwards, because in terms of when it came across you, you were already online and you were a programmer. Mm. But you didn't start out as that. Mm-mm. Right? Mm. In the sense that your journey has been twisting and turning from wanting to be an athlete, mm. right? Wanting to be a pro athlete.
Yes.
And the only way, obviously the only way to do that would be sports management.
Yes.
But then finding out that, no, the anatomy stuff
body language, which is ironic for what you ended up doing.
Again,
it's ironic that true. That was for you, that was the issue. Mm. The issue was you didn't feel that comfortable with working with the human body mm. and how the mechanisms of that, because for you it was about sport and you performing, and then you get your calling mm. while trying to do that, and then it needed you to be situated very far away from people. And then came, how do people find you? Then it was, okay, needing a website. And this is what, 2012?
Yes.
This is 2012.
Yes. Yeah.
Then having to make a website.
Mm.
Which led to you wanting to do mm. programming.
Mm.
Doing that, creating the platform for yourself, it turned you into something else.
Yep.
And I want to say that it turned you into the very first online practicing Sango.
At the time, you're absolutely right with how you captured that. The irony of seeking something and getting something else out of the journey instead. Turns out I wasn't the first practicing one.
Mm-hmm.
Nok Sangoma was.
Oh, yes.
Nok Linda Mkhize.
Yes.
Howard now.
Yes.
Yes, since she married him, my husband. Yes. She was the one
mm.
who was first at the time. And I only discovered when we would meet at interviews.
Okay.
Because you're in this bubble.
Yes.
I get when you're creating, you're not necessarily looking next door.
And back then, things weren't as interconnected as
they are. No, not really. There wasn't a hashtag Sangoma.
Yes.
Because now if you put hashtag Sangoma, you'll There's see everyone else who wants to associate with the name, yes. the brand, and who is practicing.
Yes.
So there wasn't any of that at the time.
Mm.
So in creating that platform, it was out of desperation because I didn't know how to be a suburban child introduced into Ubungoma and how that functions. Mm. And it's very ancient, original way of Ubula Gaiti. Utsuhile Hoseng already lorile kadi client tsa hao gore ke bo mamba totang and abatla balwala ka eng. That's the most basic way of how ancestry would speak to a person.
Mm.
It takes a while before I see anyone of my own age group most starting.
Yes.
But what if I'm talking about what I'm going to buy? I'm married. Go. Give me the garden boy.
So you're not in the mix of normal
life. So by creating the platform, it was out of desperation because I felt like I was misplaced from what the calling wanted me
okay.
to have as my surrounding.
So you were not creating a brand.
I had no idea what I was creating.
Mm. You just needed clients.
I just needed, no, actually. I was looking for like-minded people. I was looking for someone to validate to me that, Refilo, you're not going crazy.
Wow.
Because
you were reaching out.
I was reaching out. Hence, I made a vlog style before I created the website.
Mm.
That was when it was titled Lesedi Khanya.
Lesedi Khanya, yes.
That was my original.
Which I remember, I thought that was your name.
Exactly. For the longest time, that was yes. Lesedi.
Yes.
So, Lesedi Khanya was me literally trying to find the light in this world I'm in. I don't have relatives who are like that. My gobelas all the way in Mpumalanga. I don't have peers. Like, I don't know the language.
Mm.
So I was found by being called, but based on the environment I live in, the time I live in, where I school, etc. Mm. So that creating that platform was to find like-minded people who would validate my experience. Little did I know I was validating theirs. So it's almost like walking into this anonymous room where you walk in with no name and you're just like, yo, lena ke lora batho ba golo. Lena ke bona mapai. Lena ke a potla. Lena gonna go. It's like, we didn't even need the context of your background. It was just a room where people could.
So it's like you became to others what you were looking for
exactly.
yourself.
Exactly. And that's what I realized even going into it years later. Even till today, so I always tell my children that my gobeling style is basically the person I needed.
Okay.
So my sangoma style is the sangoma I needed. The internet individual, the brand, is the brand I felt I needed when I was opening my eyes to what is called bungoma and a calling, etc. So that's what I ultimately ended up realizing along my path, is that I created what I needed.
I want to track back a bit to those early, early days. You became a sangoma at 19.
Yeah.
Right. And in terms of how, what people come to a sangoma for, there is no, in general, there is no categorization. As in, you could be 19 and having 50-year-olds come to you to talk about 50-year-old problems.
Absolutely.
How was that for you?
It was very intimidating. My first five clients was my affluent uncle was one of them. Someone on Azamadina Kahaholo, so he was well versed in the language, in how it's supposed to feel like when to how an empty Ndumba is going to tell you nothing. Like he had spent the time visiting certain places for him to know what he needed to know.
Okay.
I was visited by one of my dad's friends as well, also a businessman. Visited by, on the first day when I came home, there was a random lady that walked in. So that was an affirmation towards the medical. Because there was no advertising, where would she have known?
Yes.
You know what I mean?
So she was sent, and yeah, there was that confirmation.
She was the affirmation,
yes,
that bungaka will fit healing
within the home.
Because there was no one who's ever came for such a thing ever before that day.
Okay. Sure. And then, in that, did you ever find yourself in a situation where you felt like, I am too young for the problems that these people are bringing to me?
Unfortunately, yes. Because I was in a bubble. A bubble created by my parents, my environment, what I felt are things that I felt I needed and wanted around me. So I was in a bubble of a 19-year-old. Modima, like, all I'm trying to do is sneak into clubs. Like, the most delinquent things is having sailor, but mona is top of mind. You know, okay, but the blackout has been. Like, it means nothing. It's irrelevant. But to that person at that age group, it's everything. It's an experience.
Because that's the phase you're in.
That's the phase. So that's the high, that's the chase that you have. So when I get to Mundumbeng and I'm like, okay, I don't know what about talking to you. And this man comes, hey, musadiwaka, hey, munnawaka,
elderly problems.
Elderly problems. Like, you can see in my big eyes at 19, the biggest experiences I had were under my parents' roof.
Because they're probably complaining about someone your age.
And then I'm like,
okay.
Because you look my age. I lost the weight. If anything, I look very athletic because I eat every day. So yes. I cannot unlook 19. You know? So, and you somehow, you feel like you have to have the answers. They've been through that and more. Marital advice, when you don't even have a boyfriend. Only 6 months long relationship.
And you have to talk about grown ups and their marital problems. How did you deal with those things whereby, you know, you couldn't check them? wait, this is human problems. This is not spiritual problems. This is psychology.
Yes.
This is counseling. This yes. is family counseling, family therapy. How did you deal with the situation? Like where did you find the insight to help them?
That's why I care about Dimbaka Nababerikisana. My mouth is just open. Do you know how many aha moments that Dingaka have, myself included, while you're advising someone else?
Where you are surprised at what you're saying.
It's even an answer for yourself. For something you're going through. You haven't vocalized it. You're still toying with the idea in your head. Is this really my problem? It's identical to your how. So there were many, many times. Moke go nomba le insight ke sa itse gore go tla biang gore ke a tseba ke tsebela kae, then ke mo bogolo le botlhale ba badimo bo bonagalang mo teng. You don't have to have lived an experience in your 19-year-old body. The spirit you carry is older than all your ancestors combined. Why do you want to quantify it?
Can you remember them in those early years, the most challenging case? Obviously, considering Sangoma patient confidentiality.
Yes.
Like, what do you remember? Like, when you found yourself like, yo, this is
tough
for me, and I'm way too young for this.
I remember when I was early, I think maybe I was a year in, and this friend of mine, family friend, came and brought his sister. His sister had a brother who was ill. This gent could have been maybe in his early 30s. This guy was non-responsive. And I was wondering why Sam is across Betlele, you know, like.
Non-responsive as in he's unconscious or he's not talking. Or
Abulele. You can just hear him breathing. They laid him down, modusing motengi, and kelatla ditaola gore, am I dealing with a life or death situation? Because am I going to remove myself from this situation? Because is a whole other
so
thing altogether.
He looked like he was about to die.
He looked very, very weak for himself. Okari, if kemunusa something,
okay.
Like the magic potions are going moving. That's not the kind of situation that it looked like could be offered for this gent. And now I'm in the middle of two situations. A friend of mine ran to me for help. He brought his girl to talk about his brother's situation, to deal with his brother's situation. That are looking at me trying to figure out, I don't even know what the hell I was going to do. I wonder about what's up. So I'm managing different levels without even being conscious of that. And I think it's so crazy how we don't realize how many levels of influence we have,
okay,
without even trying, by virtue of a situation happening
and
with
you being
said people around you. And galakladita ola ka butsa all the relevant questions. Sidim Saka was, okay, this person needs to go to the hospital. Because we addressed the issues that got him into why he was that way.
Okay.
For the sake of time, doing a physical anything about what needed to be done to rectify was much longer than what this gent needed help with. He's with us, but is not where we can access. And the person that could access him to speak to him was not even in the country at the time. So I took an executive decision after my dimba mpolela gore lokolla motho o moromele ko sepetlele. I sent him to hospital, and 24 hours later I get a call that orishile. And I'm thinking, sometimes it's so tricky. Even for instance, me sharing a story like this, someone could easily say, yo, it's so easy to play God. You could have not circumvented that situation from happening. But in the information that you gave, enlightened the family to know how to proceed with what had happened to them. Turns out there was nothing I could have done to him or for him. It needed medical intervention. But the family knew how to assist further on. Now, now they're watching, like, eh. So this can happen at any given moment. Baba rona ha yo kana ko eo, and we always want to run to her like, yo baba, khona ntshwetsa halang. Like how you always hope there's a bigger adult in the room when something's going on so that you can ask them. Now we are those adults.
You're not just an elder, an adult. You are an elder.
Exactly.
And you are Kovela, you are like the highest of the highest of the highest.
Yes. Ke ntsha lentso tsana tso khwetsa hale. So that's why I'm talking about the levels of influence that we may not even realize we have.
Speaking of the levels of influence, right? You went online trying to reach out.
Yes.
To find, you know, people who will understand what you're going through so you don't feel like you're alone and you're crazy and all of those things. Next thing you know, thousands of people are looking to you. How did that feel knowing that, especially when, you know, the internet was growing, social media was growing, and realizing the depth to which people were relying on you. That how did that feel knowing that you're actually carrying a lot of people's hope about their situations with you?
It was very overwhelming. I could say sometimes kiratonka dulo light, but not really. For instance, when we were setting up, I'm talking about technicalities. I'm conscious of that, right? But I can't get to the depth that I'm going to now name myself a DOP or a tag to it. What I'm trying to say is I knew that I was being sent to go do something which currently has no name. It has no face at the time. So it could have been anything. And I had the energy for it because I was young. I was excited about life. I was curious about this thing I'm entering. And I was entering it not even from a place of fear. So what I know about Bongaka today may not necessarily have been what I knew about it then. So as much as I wasn't a oversharer, that would trivialize it. I also wasn't conscious that there was that side to it. I don't know if you understand what I'm trying to say. So I understood it being overwhelming because so many people, I think if I made a conference and I saw them in numbers physically, I think I would have gotten it. But numbers on a post didn't say that to me. It almost felt like Badimbaka, in the journey that they have been on, they're used to numbers. That's why it's overwhelming. Mara, I am cancer.
Okay.
You know, like I didn't act like a celebrity.
It didn't phase you. It was a lot, but it didn't scare you.
Yeah, I changed. All of a sudden, kepa lakudu medi sabato motelengi. You know, it didn't get to come to me in that way because it felt like I was familiar. With always addressing, with always talking and guiding and it didn't.
So it was this, the mechanism that you needed to handle the situation was something that you feel was built into your personality.
I feel so. I think if anything, what I was lacking was someone who maybe was in the media space or could build a career out of something so small that I created. Who would have maybe, while I was doing everything, sent me to psychology school, sent me to public speaking school, sent me, you know, to add on to the tree.
Okay.
Because the talent was there.
The roots were there.
The roots were there. The direction was there. But to become and see it further than myself, I felt like if I had a mentor who was happy to even just jump in and just point a direction. Because I was also impressionable. I was young. I didn't know. I didn't have a reason to not go a particular direction. I didn't, you know, like, I had no framework in mind. I just knew there's an energy behind me and in me. I know that there's people who have a conversation, they ask for certain topics. Oh, I actually know the answers. If I don't go past tomorrow, they allow me to record and my audio hasn't disappeared or my visual hasn't disappeared. So they're backing me. You know, like it wasn't, I didn't feel like I was going against. I didn't feel like I was forcing something that was not meant to.
Mm.
So it was overwhelming because of the responsibility.
Okay. What was, in your interpretation, what was the responsibility?
The responsibility was to share and enlighten the me that I needed.
Mm-hmm.
So it was always about me.
Mm.
Like I never took away my face sitting across the room from me.
Mm.
Maybe that's why it never dawned on me that there was a Mpolerato Sfiso who beside me, who were also watching me as I'm talking to this girl.
Mm. So you are like the I don't want to say icon or, you know, role model. I want to say role model. But there are a lot of people looking to you for a lot of things. Who were you looking to?
I can't say.
Mm.
Hence, I say it felt like Badim Baka had walked this before.
Mm.
So even within myself, I've got an accountant who watches the numbers. To buy a new camera, to upskill, to get an editor. I had the creativity to come up with new topics and the professional to want to put a whole studio behind it. I felt like I had everything within me.
Mm.
Mm. I'm just that personality type. I don't know if...
being like self-reliant.
Always. I'm super independent. I'm hyper independent in everything I do. Baba Dimbal always asks me, Baba, how do you always have an extra something?
Mm.
I'm like, I'm designed that way.
Mm.
The one thing I hate is when I'm trying to be in action, I don't have.
Did you know this about you back then?
I just knew I was pedantic and anal, man. I was just, I just always needed to know that I've got more.
Mm.
And not even in a place of, I didn't feel like I was being wasteful. I just knew that the day I'm going to need this, I'm going to high-five myself for having it.
Mm.
And that's just always the mindset behind it.
Mm.
So, you know, I probably have things that I have not used in years, I've acquired years ago, but I'm still, in my mind, I know. The day I'm going to think of this, it's a matter of finding it, but when I do, it'll be more than one. And it will be fitting for the situation that I'm trying to make and realize at the time. I really don't have the words for it.
Mm. And especially in that you were not just a young healer growing within their gift and within your journey and within your work, but you're also another person. You were a public person, right? Did that ever feel like, was there ever a point where the two felt like they were clashing, where your personal spiritual journey was being impacted by what it is that was now expected of you as a public figure, as it were?
I think for the longest time, maybe that's the emphasis on me talking about a mentor, is I didn't know, firstly, what I was doing, why I was doing it, what was my own personal brand, therefore, what is the channel's brand, etc. I just knew that I had certain ethics and ethos that I was going to stick by. Otherwise, I was game. You know, for whatever came by. So, I think later on in the years, I became resentful.
Really?
To having to always show up as this person. Because that person felt like they were perfect. They were guided. They knew what to say. They were cute. They were scripted. And Bophelo is not scripted. Like, life happens to people.
I sometimes look at, when I was thinking about you, I was thinking that, you know, in some ways there's Kokomoe, then there's Rifilwe.
Absolutely.
And sometimes it would be seem like these are two different people.
Absolutely.
And I would wonder if there's ever a clash between them.
To motivate, whenever I introduce myself today, that's my ancestral name. One skirkin nandlondlo means that there is no bars held. Amukhela
sosothola. Okay.
I will not be rude. What I won't
that,
demean.
For people who don't know, what that means. What
does yes, I'm trying to give a picture. Okay. I won't be rude, right. I won't be mean, but I will tell you nete ka mgo eleng ka teng. Whereas I feel like if I was going to introduce myself as Gogo Moyo, there's a level of I must hold back. There must be a poise about me. At the end of the day, I must kind of also make sure that you kind of like me.
Because you have a brand to
uphold. It's a brand. And if I show up as Ndlondlo, I'm being honest to my ancestor and with my ancestry and myself. Because I sit in the body. I carry the body. Whereas the calling, almost like it hovers above me.
Yes.
There's no resting in the work. So if I'm going to neglect the vessel, then the resentment will always grow bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger.
So as in you grew to resent Gogo Moyo?
Yeah, not even Gogo Moyo per se, but the responsibility that came with it. Like, I felt like I had no freedom. I still felt like even in my 30s, I couldn't be allowed a scandal. You know, I couldn't, like, any weird story, like, outside of the spiritually acclaimed, enlightened, leader. All those words, it felt like I was cocooned and I wasn't allowed. It's almost like I was a rich kid who wasn't allowed to, like...
The president's child.
Yeah, who wasn't allowed to, like, take the milk and, like, go to a drive through McDonald's and, like, didn't pay. Like, something as juvenile as that, but I felt like I couldn't even do that small thing. Because there was such a bigger story that was set before me. And I have to sit between the lines and, like, you know, this is your space. Handle.
But you built Gogo Moyo.
Exactly, but that's the part of being
this. Like, you created.
Exactly. That's the
monster.
That's the monster. It was. Exactly, because I am a very law abiding person. Even in my mother's house, I stick within her rules. I don't know how not to. But there's a kid in me who has to know what happens if I don't. And that person doesn't come out to the surface often enough to make Rufilo feel like she's also has had experiences. So even when I'm out there in the world, I am campaigning for other brands. That's why it's easy for them to trust me. That no, let's fetch the ad Gogo. She won't come and talk about tomorrow. Now it's like, why is that Gogo being so crass? Because my original image, the way I was brought up, I've always been an obedient child. But I'm also daring. You know, so I'm also daring. I want to know what happens if I push the envelope. What happens if I... So that the two in me came along fighting from time to time. Yes.
When you were building the brand, right? Like as we were talking earlier before we started that, you had a whole studio and everything. What at that point, what was the plan? What were you building towards? What was the vision at that time?
At that time, I wanted to...
Because that YouTube channel was growing as well.
Yes.
It was huge.
But I also felt like my people weren't being very loyal because the numbers say I'm everything, but the subscription said we're not really wanting to ask the fact that we're also part of your movement. Like, we love you, but not publicly.
But we don't want to say it publicly.
Because if it was publicly, I would have had my plaque and moving on to another plaque. To speak on the why. And that's, at the end of the day, I'm a person in the world. I also deserve my accolades. I also have to see when I hired my production team.
Yes.
This is the stuff that I was kind of chasing. To validate, we see the work.
Yes.
Not just consume the work.
Yes.
Grow spiritually.
Yes.
So much that you can even go open a channel and regurgitate my stuff. And then,
because I think what sometimes what people don't realize about being a person who does, I suppose, create content, I hate the word content, but
yes,
who does that, is that you can choose to be very oblivious to the numbers.
Like, yes.
Like for me, my approach, my understanding with the podcast is that I'm sitting with you now. Afterwards, I'm going to go home. I'm going to record my pod. This is the people that I see. It's me and it's the person that I'm talking to, right?
That's it.
The idea of there's people out there listening or what?
Even globally.
You know what I mean? Yes. It's something that is very, it doesn't come across. You don't feel like there's thousands of people in front of you, you know what I mean, listening to it, doesn't, you really feel like you're alone. You really, really feel like you're alone. And you sometimes you'd get the numbers there, but you still feel like you're
alone. It doesn't register.
It does, because you don't see the people.
My point, to the point that I was trying to make earlier, when you're talking about responsibility and all those things, is your journey with Kwantu.
Yes.
You know the why. Yes. You know this unsettled feeling in your heart that says there's a reason why I get about what I'm talking. Because I don't have a collective of elders going, how do we do this? So I'm going to open it up to the world and see what we have in common and what we don't. And the general census of when we talk about Africanism and spirituality, someone lives off this content. It validates who they are. It validates the dreams that they see in their dream state. Finally, someone can articulate it in English, that this is what, that's what that meant. It meant everything. This episode, how can I like this more than once?
How can I hear it for the first time again?
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's everything. You, the content creator. I love that I got to talk to Gogo again. That was dope. You know, you got to cover this. Oh, the conversation is growing. You're looking at it from a production, churning out material, churning out, churning out. You didn't even come back and sit in it. To see, like, to dumb yourself down and retake it in as a neutral person.
So you wanted to get some kind of, not reciprocation, but some recognition.
Like, if you say you like, it's like me making clothes. If you say you like it, wear it.
Buy it.
If you're wearing it, you bought it.
So people can't say you're the best brand ever, but you're not selling anything.
That's the thing. I got the affirmations through the brands saying, we want you to talk on Kelly Kumalo's series. We want you to go talk about Castle Milk Stout, Africa Day. The affirmations were there via brands, but the brand is irrelevant if the people are not listening. Because someone made sure that there's a kind of a tipping point for the brand to pick me up. So I was seeing the outreach that, oh, this is eventually what happens when something is good and it's consistent. But my people didn't take me from a certain level and put me where they felt I deserved. So by them not doing that, instead they did. By virtue of not, they said to me, we're not going to commit to this conversation because also we're fighting demons in our homes. We believe in spirituality, but dare I, my mom, find out that I'm listening to Sangoma music for fun, or I'm listening to Sangoma talking about African spirituality. There's another conversation I'm going to get in trouble about at home. I get that our conversations are tricky. They're difficult. Hence, we have them online. We can't have and people like, someone's going to come crash our tent and say, why are you assembling here? We don't believe in your stuff. So we have to run to where we go. But when we do get there, how do we show that, give us more of this?
So you're building this brand. You're building this brand. You're one of the pioneers then, 2015, there around there. Social media is growing. You also discover the dark side of social media.
Yes.
You start to catch bullets now. You start to catch backlash, which today in 2023 is a norm.
Yes.
Back then it wasn't.
We had to crawl so others could run.
How was it, those early experiences of negative experiences with people online?
And you know, because we create this content in a cocoon. So the energy I took in Kayo, and I like me psyching myself up. I did so much, man, to even share this content. And you're going to sit there behind some alias and you're going to come cramp my style so hard. Like, you just bit, like, trivialized.
Did it get to you?
It definitely. No lie. The fact that I live in a baby household, I was also comfortably sitting, living in the burbs for so long. I wasn't forced to speak Sepedi fluently. But the thing that I also thank is, because you can't dialogue with people without learning the language. So it kept me back into the class of linguistics. Otherwise, I don't know how much of our African languages I would know. by virtue of that. So that's the irony of everything.
Mm.
Yes, it still reteaches you what is relevant and what you still need today. So you start a channel, there you are excited, talking in your English, not even your best English, because that was like your standard way of communication. And like, automatically they are killing you here, because like your dialogue is already
like
wrong.
They're not even listening to what
no,
you're
no,
saying.
The fact that you delivered in English, ma'am, how dare you? And I'm like, but you're defeating the point, because this is a global conversation. How many of our brothers and sisters are misplaced from Africa? How many times did we have to leave our own spaces to go live in other spaces because we could not live in our rightful homes because of the unrest or whatever difficulty we're dealing with? So why am I limited to speaking a certain language? If moya wa motho muZulu ori khona le ntwe ke mtshwaretseng yona botlhale bo ke mtshwaretseng bona, how am I supposed to relay that to them if talk was spit? I've lost that person. So, like, why are you trivializing this thing as if what I told you was not just gold? I gave you so much wisdom in like a 15 clip. Lwana you believe wana handle go expert. I just listened to this and like, whoa, it made so much sense. And in the most basic of terms, I didn't even need to be like a professor. But you trivialize even the importance of what I said based on language.
How did that make you feel? What about it surprised you about the backlash? Considering that there will always be positive and negative, but did the backlash ever surprise you about how can this be an issue?
Yes, because I was juvenile in my emotional intelligence about it. I always thought that we were singing Kumbaya.
Like,
batho ba ke baeletsang stuff sena ba vibe le sona ba ngrata re ka kopana ko dimoleng ga ba di hug go pa di photo go easy. We'll even sit and have milkshakes. It didn't even have to be a, oh, do you know who that is? Because I wouldn't even make you feel that way. So because I'm also being part of the people, why do you have to fetch me from where I am and tell me all the bad about me? So it was a shock.
Did you ever get like in life confrontations with
people? No. People are not that brave, generally.
You got that energy.
Nah, people are not that brave, generally. That's why it happened to like actresses, and that's because you have a long-term like character that's like slapping women or stealing people's men. The resentment grows into mushabile every day. But you see, we don't have that energy. So why would they walk up to me and
say
some stuff?
Does it ever surprise you that people would be mean online but they wouldn't actually be that way in person? That creates some, because sometimes it confuses me how we can be so mean to people, but whereas in real life we actually wouldn't say half the things that we say to them online.
But that's why they say we are screen warriors. Like rebo sa shafia se go screening once only more, you can't even find your inner Beyonce. So people fight what they fear about themselves the most.
Then you posted those pictures.
I didn't even feel some type of way.
And then they were like, yo,
the same
there
people
are no
did
more
it.
Secrets anymore.
The same people did it.
She has now outed everything.
That one was such a tricky one because I felt so upset.
Is it? Why?
Because it became a character assassination versus, let's really unpack and discuss why we feel this is not appropriate. So by virtue of that, you lose my respect because now you're coming for me. Whereas like you're losing a very crucial moment of educating. And not just myself, but my whole entire following. I'm a leader of a pack. This is a moment for gore koko le mo bogolong ba hao. Gona di moments tse so. Tla go bontsha why moment e so is appreciated, even if wena awa itlisa ka lenyatso. That's a different conversation. That's
it's a
why
conversation.
Yes, that's a whole conversation. Now bona ke ala ke na ba maotokere a re bolele. I'll even put it on camera so it can even reach the furthest seas and oceans, because I really want to learn from this moment. Now when you're going to come for me because you feel like you were also you graduated from another social media gogo or whatever, and you already revere them more than you revere me, whereas I didn't even need to be a god in the first place. Now you're like, you're putting people against each other. No, you don't have to do that. Like, base what this is really about on that.
Did it ever become a serious thing, this thing of healers being pitted against each other? Did it ever really impact you in any way?
We, even when they do and they tag me on people's sensationalism, I don't comment. Why am I coming to the circus? If I did something, for instance, there was this other gogo, she's in the Free State, I think. I don't want to mention her name. On Instagram, she posted a ceremony not so long ago, and it was being conducted differently. And obviously, Sangoma warriors, Bamafunu, they went for her. Little were trying to find out that the why are you doing this differently? You know, what about this ceremony? Didn't you conduct it in the norm? And only later, after they like called her names, grouped her, boxed her, like they literally formed circles just to go at her. She's like, but if you had asked me, I would have educated you. Now you've lost an opportunity to learn. But because I insist, because I have to educate your ignorance, this was based on culture, not based on ubungoma. Hence, it was done differently. And ubungoma is done in a more standardized way. It may differ here and there. But culturally, do you understand? There's context for everything. The lineage, the type of people in that family, they speak to the why ultimately it's done a particular way. So they'll go and fetch you as a kokomoyo and tag you on a post like that, that ladies. And you get there and you actually look at the context and you're like, fam, got no energy for this.
You're building this brand. You're building it. It's there. Everyone is watching you. And then you vanished. Just like that.
You just disappeared. I actually vanished before anything significant happened. Oh my gosh. Hey, I was a young kobela. And I had the worst luck. And only a few people can understand this. Adina entourage.
Okay, what does that mean?
There's an entourage yampande.
Okay.
They are there by obligation.
Okay.
Because.
So these are the people that you went with.
You learned them there. They're your elder brothers. They're your whatevers. Yeah. They're affiliated with you based on the place and the grouping that trusted Gayona. They're there by obligation. If there's someone who wants to befriend you, that's something different. It's a bonus. But everyone is there by obligation. You're like, we expect to see you there. Everyone knows, like, so sobenza. They don't think, let's go have a job. They know it's by obligation. Because sometime next year, they'll be doing something similar or whatever. They want the same lolo to come show up to their ceremony. I get. So that's a whole obligation and family that we're building based on spirituality. Even when there's problems, we show up. When there's a funeral, we show up. It's an affinity. Then there is, in my career, I could probably say I would have like 50 people in my entourage if I wanted to. Based on the people I've met, the different impandas I've come across, people I feel like impactful, that I revere, that I still think that they're amazing, I've got those in my immediate circle, but I don't feel like I have to move with them.
Okay.
They can go to an event and I don't even have to know about it or be at it, and I won't feel like I've lost out or why they're not seeing me in public with these people, right? So at the end of everything, if I notice that Badimbaka don't like the plus one, because these people don't have the true motive and reason as to why they're standing beside me. So if you take away the brand name and what it means and what the benefits are, would they still choose my spirit to go through life with? And that's what ultimately Badimbaka see. And then they get rid of you. So I walk alone for the most part. But even if I need to host an event, I'll know, I'll call him. Everyone will show up because I've got a good standing with each one. But they're not going to leave their lives just to hang out with me just so that we can publicly look like we're a band. So I'm trying to get to what you asked me. So at the end of it, I have these kids who see Gogo Moyo as a public figure. And they expect what they see on the socials to be happening even in my own private home. And I'm a different person. Ndlondlo and Gogo Moyo are different people. Gobela Haki Ndlondlo. That's a strict person. That's uniformed and aligned, a rule follower, a rule giver. Gogo Moyo is a, I understand you're going through a calling. Let me support you in this way. They've got a softer approach to dealing with this. Whereas Ndlondlo won't baby you and refuses to baby you because if I baby you, you'll miss the bigger picture of why you've been called. And then you're going to have a weird relationship with me based on that as your teacher. Whereas I need to teach you to stand up and be strong on your own. Do you understand? So I have these kids, they rock up and my gobera is the most unlikable person in the world who does not wish anything well for me. Like,
people, so this is what they say.
No, I know this about them. Okay. Face value, hey, don't look at it. Oh, nalba na ing aru tuse. But my spirit, even ekuruba alaba mponsa huyoko bela, how can wait like for your demise? Like, she's plotting, she's doing this, she's doing that, and now I have to juggle almost like a fake relationship because I can't go through certain levels of graduation in this new role without being put through by my gobela. She has to initiate me the second time into Bukobela.
Okay.
Because bongaka ke fitile mo bona. I can do that on my own, standard. I don't need your support. But I cannot initiate someone else's child and claim I know if I don't get the same learnings that you partake, you put me through. Yes. Exactly. And heke tlagegile kwa ya komang. Baba, ntuse ngwana so. Mponse, what are the rules of engagement? Ing. Lena must follow suit. Ho lena 20 years, 10 years, 5 years from now, when I get a child saying baba kena le ngwana, I know what to do because they put me through the same process. So I had the worst possible luck. Munga ka re, it's bad luck or it's good luck, depending on how you look at it. But I don't have a group of people that roll with me like that. So when my children come through, I'm dealing with all these different personalities, cultural learnings for each person. And it got so much. Eventually, it became disastrous. It became poisonous even for me because the people I'm trying to source help from, like, they can't wait to spit on my grave. They can't wait to laugh at my disastrous past as a gobela. You know, they can't wait to write about me in papers to say, oh, if the show like Moja Live FA Gobela used to exist at the time, I'm happy to nominate her type of energy, you know? So I was going through so much and I just felt like I was surrounded by disingenuous people. And that's ultimately also the reason why I stopped the channel. Because it would make it seem as if you being on the channel, you're not giving us time to be our gobela. And we're fighting for your attention. And it was not true. There's no one who beats themselves up like myself. If we have a relationship, I'm going to honor the relationship. And I will literally, if there's a timetable to my life, I'll record on Wednesdays. And for the rest of the 6 days, it's me and you. And even on that one day, they found a way to make it seem like, akeyo mobona. But that was like a human thing about them, you know? And that's still the persona and the facade of who they thought they came to Twasa by. And those are different people. The advertising was different to what you found at the house.
What do you think people were expecting? Like
that lovely girl that kept on saying, hi, this is Isa Sendumbeni, and yeah, counseling and hugs and whatever. I'm not that person. I just knew that when I was going through the calling, I would have appreciated someone who would give me a hug from time to time to make me understand that it's a difficult journey, but it's also a human experience. But what I offered online, they thought that they were being offered at the homestead as well, where I was teaching. And that was not the same.
Sure.
It was not dark and night. It was not light and day. Different. But there was a clear distinction. Khur Baba is not willing to come forth in that light. But you can damn hell sure know that she's got your back. She'll teach you what she knows. She'll go above and beyond for you and.
Mm.
But she's not willing to offer the emotional side that you thought was part of the package.
If I may ask, why?
Just like how I say, I want to educate strong and independent healers.
Mm.
I feel like when you lace it with this love and softness, people, depending on what level of intelligence, emotional intelligence they have, they want to hold on to the softer side and almost be oblivious to the fact that a week later you could be dead. Because I want to for what it truly is.
I think there's the reason I'm asking is that there's always been this debate about how difficult should lefetlo actually be. Because some people say, you know, I was close to death when I was there. It was terrible. And then you hear other stories about, no, Kobela makes me wash her underwear. You know, there's this constant debate about what do you define as difficult and what do you define as educational.
Okay, so what I've never had a near-death experience. I don't even think they know which drawer in my wardrobe my underwear stay. Like, they can't tell me that. They can't tell anyone that.
Mm.
I've got a helper in the house. I've always had my entire life.
Mm.
For the reason that when I'm at work, let's be accountable on Terekopanetsing Yona. I don't expect you to make me breakfast, lunch, etc. Half of my students, the most they know is how I take my tea. Because that's not where I invite them into. Besides, if I'm trying to live to be many years into the industry, I cannot send a trusser who's impressionable to go make me food, depending on how they feel about me on that day. Something in my food.
Mm.
I avoid situations that are unnecessary. So I demarcate my life, keep things as they are. Much like your colleagues don't know so much about your life. They don't have to. Just keep it business. And that suffices. So even in the work of Bukorela, can we separate our lives from the fact that I actually like a quieter song or whatever song? In that moment, but I don't have to be likable to you. I don't feel like I have to talk about boyfriends or situations to you just to make you feel as if, oh, we're actually this in the same age group. I'm here to teach you a fundamental skill. Your parents sent you to me hoping, whatever you're going to learn there, on its own, it should give you a career. And you should be able to teach the next generation in your immediate family how to conduct themselves, what's important about family, etc., etc., even the society in which you live. So if I'm trying to be your friend, your bestie, your Kobela, and all those things in one, when are we getting to that? Especially when you consider even shorter and shorter and shorter time. So if I'm trying to be all of these impenshi vibes with you, when are we getting to the actual work?
When you disappeared, where did you go? What actually happened? Did you just stop posting or did you close down lefetlo? What happened?
I carried on. I was under obligation of teaching people, so I could not have closed Ndumba or the school. I carried on the school. Self-counseled through the difficult experiences I had gone through.
What self-counsel?
Self-counsel is when you sometimes feel like if I go to a psychologist, I still have to go explain bungaka. I still have to go explain why it's important. I still have to go explain our cultural dynamic. Because I would say the psychologist how it looks to understand the leveling thing. And I was not always prepared to go explain the menial things. Because so if I have to still go to my vusi koma thomong, oh, this is why bakuna mbam papa tela. This is why ing. Then go fit a neng gon tweke batang hobo da kayo na. So I ended up doing a lot of that, you know. So I ended up traveling a lot, retracing my family history of things I knew and digging deeper. So I just kept myself busy in that sense. And then in between all of that, I lost one of my best friends. He passed away. Yes, that was also one of the pivotal moments in my disappearance. In his loss, I reconnected with an old friend of mine who ultimately became the love of my life, the father of my children, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Nice.
So that loss brought a lot of healing as well and a new lease on life. Funny enough, you don't realize that you've been dreaming about bits and pieces of your story until it happens and you're like, I've seen this before. So in my disappearance, yes, I went to go do that. I went to go...
You went and had a whole family.
I went to go begin my family. The one thing I kept on praying and puttering about my entire existence.
Really?
You wanted Once I was put in Kondumbeng, I realized, hore, when why are these people going out on a limb? But like Kondumbeng, yo, my daughter has an issue. My husband, this. Nako, like, who's asking about me? And my wellness. Like, who's going to Kondumbeng asking for Kikapona, you know? So I went to go have a whole family.
I was actually curious how balancing all of these things, how it was impacting your personal relationships. Balancing being a healer, being a kovela, being a public figure and all of those things. Especially in that, as you were saying, that Kokomoyo had a you know, a look, had a brand. Not to say facade, but there was a, you know, she was a thing. Then how do you know how to trust people who are new people? I suppose maybe that's why it had to be someone you already know.
I still don't trust people.
Mm.
I trust them as far as I can throw them, and that's not far. I based my relationships based on the consistency or the inconsistency.
Mm.
The relationship I have with you has been consistent.
Mm.
With the same plea, the same energy, the same path, I've got no reason to doubt it.
Mm.
And if there was ever any kind of thing I want to create, I wouldn't hesitate phoning you.
Mm.
You've shown me the energy that you want to associate with me on.
Mm.
And what it does for you, you know, it's mutually beneficial. Mm. So I don't take to people very easily.
Is that something that came about through your experiences, or is that, have you always had a distrust?
It's becoming a healer.
You've lost trust in people.
Yeah, I was happy to vibe with people for as long as I could. And I'm such a selfless person.
You are very
person.
Social.
Exactly.
Extremely social.
And I'm such a selfless person. I always want to give. Let's share. Like, no one has to know how much we had to share for it to look the way it looks. Like, I'm a real trooper. But people have shown me that they're not here for the same things, you know? And therefore, I had to also adjust, even if it was not very natural for me. But because I had to see, it's either me or them. Let me cut the relationship. Let me listen. Let me build a wall. Let me... So ultimately became who I am. And I was very distrusting. I probably could have like so many Sangoma friends, but I don't believe people. Like, I believe their actions. I don't believe what they say, you know? So those who made sure that they wanted me to be in their lives, till today, I can bank on them. I do have those people. But it's not as many as maybe you'd like to assume. And why should you have a big entourage? Like, it's the most unsafest thing to have, because do you really call those people whenever you're down? And I think there should be a balance as to why you call people like that close to be in your life. You know what I mean? Like, it must be realistic.
Have you noticed a change in, since you went offline for that, what, like a year and a half?
Mm.
Has there been a change in the people who come to you either as Matwasa or as people seeking help? Has there been a change? Because back then you were popular, you know, like Coco, everyone is dreaming about you.
Basically. That's true. That's true. Gotta put a portion out in the air. You know, that's true. And I could say yes. First of all, the frequency changed.
Okay.
how often I would see people changed. I kill people also with, like, I think, well, there's this level of us that makes us fickle. Out of mind, out of sight, you know? So now if I'm out of sight, you won't think about me as often. Unless if there's something profound about the why you need to associate with me, or there's something I need to do for your journey, or et cetera, et cetera. But generally, for a person who's generally seeking, if there's no reason for something to stand out for you, it's okay to move with whatever's new or draws you at the time, you know? So I could say the frequency lessened, and I really got to start dealing with different cases, Kondombeng.
Okay.
When I was online, almost like I was directing the narrative of the people I wanted to see.
Really? So they were coming for the same thing?
Yeah. So if I wanted to have a, let's talk about pregnancy for the next 6 months, Lord and behold, that's me. Like, I was that. When you talk about influence, then now when I look at it, I'm like, I actually was, to a point where I could tell you who I wanted Kondombeng without actually putting the words out there. Because of the conversations I was having, I was hosting certain conversations that made those people feel like
gravitate towards
that's where
you.
We're needed. That's where we're going. And in the year and a half, I was lesser because I had two children back to back. So look, Kondombeng, I was not as often Kondombeng, you know. I would be in the background, mostly in Eleba Nabaka Bakwa Twasitsen Baba Holo, you know, Bantu Saka Huta, Baba Linten, Baba Nyani. So that community around me, I could say it literally helped me a lot. Because whenever I wasn't physically able to do something, I could call someone that has passed a certain level of education to do it for me. So a lot has changed. I could say only now I'm back Kondombeng full time. Now, since I left. Because I also had such difficult pregnancies on my body. So
do you think if you had not been online, you would have been a different healer? If Kokomo you never existed?
I would think so. I think I also caused or was part of my narrative. And that's why I speak to mentors are so important.
Even though you didn't have one.
Especially because I didn't have one. Because I feel like the mentor I needed in a public space is different to the mentor I needed as just a sangoma operating in Ndumbenyam. Those are two different realities. You're talking to two different class of people as well. There's one who's willing to have online conversations, there's one that's willing to akuke ke moya mo adutseng mo teng gore ke na ko Ndumbeng e le wile kopa masapo. Those are different. And now in the past 2 years, I'm speaking more to, I was moved from where I was to come be placed here. And you couldn't even place a recent video that could have played to incite that conversation in their minds. So I got to have the best of both worlds and to see it differently. What Ndumbayaka looks like with an active channel or an active participation on social media and zero. And I'm trying so hard to get back on it. I feel like I'm like I have two left feet.
Why are you trying to get back?
Because I don't know. Because I feel like I've been gone for so long. I don't know. I just feel like I want to talk to people now again. And I've got a different conversation. I want to talk about motherhood. I want to talk about, you know, balancing life differently with the kids now. I want to talk about being a mother of special children. I want to talk about being a lifelong partner. Like, I want to talk about different conversations.
It sounds like you're not coming back as Kokomoya.
Oh no, I don't resonate with her. And maybe that's why I'm struggling to go back to her platform. I feel like I need to open a new page.
Because she's someone else.
She's someone else. I don't resonate with her.
What is different about you and her now?
I think just my energy. Like, I've got 10% energy to put into anything right now because I'm so scattered. Also, I want to talk about entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I took on. And I was guided by my ancestors while I was still pregnant that, hey, do this.
Mm.
And they gave me the money for it. And I'm like, okay. And since then, I was like, whoa, why didn't I do this before?
Mm.
Considering that I had such a reach, I would have been a millionaire by now. Like, no, it had to happen like this.
Do you think you're better equipped? Or since you say now, since there's such a difference between the first, when you started and now, you know, do you think that there's a... You are far better equipped, or do you think that you're starting over again with something else and you have to relearn how to be online again?
I think it's the latter. I think I need to relearn, and I can also appreciate why maybe people didn't have the best relationships with me then, or couldn't understand the Gogo of Moyo vibe then. You know, because also we're in different parts of our lives. So I was like an airy, fairy, carefree, you know, pioneering, let's do this, like, type of energy. Whereas now, I feel like I'm more conscious in the stuff I'm doing. I'm a lot older, so I have to be more mature in my thinking. I have to make sure that I'm thinking for 20 years down the line and not for now.
Mm.
Let's see where this goes, type of thing. Like, a relationship you start now versus when you were earlier on, you're looking for different things from them.
Mm.
You didn't even have a set list of what you want. You're like, let's vibe. That's what they call it.
Mm.
Let's vibe.
Just vibes.
Yeah. You're not looking for vibes now.
Now, looking at the landscape now, especially online and offline in terms of healing space, compared to what it was back in 2012, what are the key differences about Ubungoma online that you're seeing?
It looks like...
Because now, back then it was you and Nox, and at some point Mpo Abadimu was there. You know, like there was now, like, now there's 10,000 people.
Yeah, and all of them are experts.
Huh.
Yeah. Now, I won't say it's been trivialized, but what seemed like it was a calling within a calling for it is no longer there. Because everyone can buy the setup. Mic, lights, the environment. Everyone can create the environment. So getting started is easy. It's what we're willing to share. It's the levels at which we're willing to share it and to get popular and to get the new clients and seem a bit more wiser than the other, etc. I just feel like now it's a saturated industry. Like, I don't think there's like a speciality about it currently.
Do you want to make a difference in that? In you coming back?
I want to have a grown folk approach to the conversations I'm trying to have, and not just have a generic conversation. And I feel like that's what's happening online right now, and that's why people feel like they can move from one person to another, because it seems so like it's so generic, when if we're talking about Badimu, we're talking about callings of many different natures and many different kinds. So you have to have a said person for different things, not necessarily a generic, if you understand what I'm trying to say. Like, there's nothing generalized about the work or the industry that we're in. And only when you've grown up, in a sense, and life has changed for you, can you understand that it was never general in the first place. But by your outlook at the time and what you had access to and exposed to, that's maybe what made it look like it was a general thing about it.
Do you think social media is still helping when it comes to spirituality? Like, it in terms of your intentions back then, do you think right now social media is helping with people with their spiritual journey?
I think at the crux of it, yes. Because there would not be a demand of something that's not important. are still worth or has relevance. Mm. So I think yes. I think we need to check ourselves as people. If what we're saying is stuff that we want to share and it's good enough for the next person, where's our level of integrity in that?
Mm.
And also versus the setting in which you were taught, what you're sharing, do you feel like it resonates to the environment in which they held the initial conversations for you? Because by then, like, we insta, it's flowers. Mm. We insta, it's essence. Mm. And that's why you're willing to now, like, publicize it in the way, in the manner in which you do it now. Much like the dress code of Bokoko Hebabina now.
Mm.
I've seen on social media, like, they're getting shorter and shorter, the skirts, whether it's a male or a female. And I think, I don't think I would ever get up or less demo. Worse, when I'm actually going to do its work.
Mm.
By virtue of me being in a space, what more if I'm going to perform a specific task or ritual or said activity? I must check myself. If I'm going to check my basket, if it has all the things I need, I must check myself if I'm in the image of what I need to be doing.
Mm.
You know?
Mm.
So I think it boils down to the Gobela level. There my kids go. In the Gobela level and also yourself. You sacrifice your time for you, time away from your family, your own set dreams. Is it the same thing that you're currently doing as well? Are you proud of being a part of that fraternity?
Mm. How do you view that 2012 refill is starting out now? When you look at her, what do you see?
I love it for her because I love that she was never scared, even if she didn't know how big it was.
Mm.
But she was never afraid. She was never afraid. She was never intimidated by it. And intentions on its own, I feel like she didn't do it for the clout. She didn't do it for the, I want to be known by whoever, I was sit next to whoever. That came because of the honesty and the earnesty in which she did her stuff.
Mm.
You know? So I'd back her up any day. I just wish there was someone, just someone in all the millions of people who watched her from afar who said, I need to walk next to her to help her guide her steps. I don't have to stop her. But if I go along guiding and showing her a bigger picture to what she sees, then maybe the story would have turned out a bit more differently.
Would she have listened?
I believe she would have.
Mm.
I'm very obedient. I'm okay with taking instructions, guys. Like, just make sense.
Mm.
I'm okay.
What would you tell her not to do?
I would tell her not to take it personally. The attempts that she made or the things that she thought she was doing or wasn't doing enough, I'd say she must separate herself and not put it as if it's a direct representation of her. I mean, like, this was a gift given within a gift. She would have never known how far and wide it spread or the impact or the lack of. It's something that she had to go through. And by virtue of saying that, I'm happy she did, because in my turnaround, if in me wanting to come back, I want to come back, but on my own terms, in a different way.
Mm.
I'm still trying to map out the how I want to do it. You know, that's going to still be true to me, keep my boundaries, and feel like I'm having a human experience as well. So she had to go through it for the woman in me to know what I need.
Wow.
To sustain me now and to my ever after. I may have another break even after my comeback, which will rock Le Fatsi and the world and beyond. Mm. Because why not?
Is that the new intention?
That's why I'm like, why not? I don't even know how it's supposed to be. I just know that whenever I do something, I do it with true intent. Mm. And my people always find me. And because I've got people out there in the world, all over the globe, and that's why I'm an international sangam. Even in my practice, weekly I speak to people abroad, in South Africa, high level, low, everyone, because there's a true essence about the spirit of Ndumbayaka and my narrative and my stories, that it doesn't matter how it's projected. I must, at the core of everything, I must be comfortable. And once I'm uncomfortable, the whole boat is going to shake. It's going to show.
Do you want to be big again?
I want to be... I want to be relevant. Big or small, I want to be relevant to whatever the space that I'm in. I want to be impactful.
This is the new intention.
Even if I'm behind someone else.
I think one of the things that I really appreciate about this conversation was that it shows that in many ways, whether you like it or not, you do not walk your spiritual journey alone. Not only that, but other people can have a profound impact on your spirituality and your understanding, not just of it itself, but of you as a person. For Ugogo to basically sacrifice a public platform that she had built over so many years, that had such a worldwide reach and had become a go-to place for literally thousands of people, to give that all up as a way of re-evaluating her relationship with her spiritual journey, speaks to just how deeply personal things of the spirit are and just how drastically they can impact your life. You have to remember that she is verifiably a veteran in terms of the amount of time that she has been active as a healer online. She has also been a gobela for many years. So this is not a case of hype getting to a person's head. And I think her willingness to give up such a huge aspect of what she had built in order to go back to the basics says a lot about her commitment to her own truth and her own authenticity. But it also forces you to think about your own journey and how you deal with the changes that life throws at you. Like how much of what you truly enjoy, what you truly believe to be the best aspects of your journey, sometimes even the very gift that you believe that you have, how much of it are you willing to give up in order to return to what is ultimately a basic truth? While I was thinking that Ugogo went through a soul-searching sabbatical, kanti this whole time she went and had an entire family, she quite literally found the best aspects of her purpose in life and brought them into the world, all the while doing it quietly, at her own pace, at her own time, in her own space. Can you think of a moment or a time when God or spirit or Idlozi wanted you to step away completely from what you felt was the right path for you? While you think of that, here's a little story. So, when I was in high school, I dated this girl, right? To say that we dated is a bit of a stretch because it lasted all of a few weeks, which is, I suppose, when you're in high school, it's a long time. The thing was that she was the one who had initiated the relationship, Wangshela. And the truth is that I wasn't all that into her, but I agreed because I kind of didn't want to hurt her feelings because she was really a genuinely good person. I know. But anyway, when she broke up with me, she did it in the most poetic way ever. So we were walking one day and I was walking her home. And you know, Kokasi, when you are walking your girl home and then you find that spot, that corner where you stand and the sun is going down, the sky is like nice and orange and purple and whatever, and it's nice and cool in the summer breeze. So as we're standing there, she cups her hand like you would if you were like delicately holding a butterfly, but you didn't want it to fly away, like holding it between the palms of your hands. Then as she was staring gently at her hands, she said, "You know, when you think that you have found something, something beautiful, something important." And then she slowly opened her hands to reveal her empty palms and said, "Then you realize that it's not there." She says this as she looks at me with her eyes glistening. Many of us go into African spirituality with a preconceived notion about what it is. This is especially true because of the sheer amount of content that speaks on this topic. We consume so much that we feel like we're very well versed in it. We go into African spirituality believing that we are holding this delicate, beautiful thing that we understand even before we get into it. But in our personal lives, we've been walking about with our hands cupped, afraid to look. We are afraid to look at what exactly is this thing that we're holding on to. Like a caged butterfly, we are afraid that if we open our hands, it will at best fly away, or at worst, you'll open your hands and there'll be nothing there. African spirituality is not what I thought it was. My relationship with it has, over the past 11 years or so, evolved and completely changed. And in many ways, this podcast was the main catalyst for this change. I want to share with you where I currently stand with my beliefs, but I now realize that I have to add a disclaimer to this. I need to say that this is what I believe in 2023, in October 2023. I should also probably even add a day, because we could go to sleep today and wake up tomorrow and realize that it has popped off while we're sleeping and the whole world has changed. African spirituality, especially in its current iteration right now, is not the be-all and end-all of beliefs. Simply because our understanding of Africa or Africa, of Africans and Africanness, is really based on our current understanding of its beingness. But the reality is that this continent has been around for hundreds of thousands of years, and there are unimaginable things that have gone on that in many ways we'll probably never even know about. Deeply, immensely spiritual things that have occurred on this continent that we don't know about, but have in some way survived. But I still believe that we're only surviving on a sliver of what the whole picture actually is. I believe that African spirituality is one color in a spectrum of multicolored modalities. Yet, it is also not a belief that I can choose to believe in or not to believe in. What I mean is that I was born a black person. I was born into a particular dimensional structure. And if you listen to the episode on the ancestral realm, you will get a better understanding of what I mean. But here's a simple explanation. We generally understand the idea of soulmates, right? And you may also be familiar with the belief that falls within reincarnation about how we choose certain experiences in our lives as part of our soul's growth. So that means that myself and a couple of billion other people chose to share a collective soul tie, and we chose to come into this world as black people. As a collective, we live within a particular mechanism of spirituality, and why that is so, I don't really know. But it doesn't take much to realize that different groups of people within the human race live under seemingly different frameworks. I mean, look at the different patterns that keep repeating themselves within different groups over decades, over centuries, over millennia even. I don't want to point them out because it will seem as though I'm discriminating, I'm judging, but look at everything that has happened over the past 1,000 years. Look at all of history within that time frame. Now, imagine if you could put on something like X-ray glasses that let you see the spiritual realm, and you could see what has happened within the spiritual realm in the past 1,000 years. A question then would be, does the spiritual realm mirror what has happened in the physical? Were we colonized spiritually? Did it happen before it happened physically, or did it happen afterwards? Was our identity violated and the essence of who we are enslaved and exploited on the ancestral realm, on the spiritual realm, on the etheric realm as well? Personally, when I look at the realities of Black people, and in fact, all Indigenous people around the world, and the poverty and socioeconomic turmoil that they have been stuck in for hundreds of years, I can't help but wonder, what is happening in the spiritual realm? I don't really know, but this is what I mean when I say that my being Black isn't only about my skin, but it crosses dimensions too, because a lot of our lived experiences as Black people dictate what we will experience when we pass from this world. And the mechanism through which we become ancestors is embedded in how we experience our lives and interpret our experiences in this particular life. This reasoning comes from one of the most profound insights that have ever been shared with me, and it was when Mkulumo Makhanya said that there are townships in the ancestral realm. Again, if you want to know more about this, listen to Into the Ancestral Realm, but this idea may not particularly resonate with you. It may even be offensive. But you would also be hard-pressed to deny that all too often some of our ancestors seem to have desires that are, well, earthly. What does it mean when I die and I come back to my living loved ones and want things from them? What does it mean when I am supposed to be a spirit being that lives outside of time and space and have no physical body, yet I am complaining about being cold or being hungry? This is one of the things that creates a deep sense of doubt with me when it comes to African spirituality. Our lived experiences shape how we experience the afterlife. Our experience of Blackness seems to follow us into the hereafter, and I personally believe that it is a big part of why Black people have been stuck in a cycle of hardship and exploitation that has lasted for centuries. There absolutely must be some spiritual connection to what has been happening to Indigenous people in the past 1,000 years, especially because it seems as though on the other side, it takes a lot to rid ourselves of our attachment to our Blackness and those lived experiences of Black people. And when I say African spirituality is not what I thought it was, I mean simply that it's not about candles or impepo or ancestral cloths or having bad luck. It is an immensely complex framework of being that exists across dimensions of space and time. And as a people born of the lineage of those who have been on this continent for hundreds of thousands of years, we have a particular backstory that is built into us. And this backstory seems to have us bound into a particular existence. And for me, this begs some kind of understanding of how do we deal with this backstory? Well, let's talk about it in the next episode. My name is Wasum Tsinglande. Thank you for joining me on yet another episode of The Journey Kwantu. I wish you light, I wish you courage, and I wish you all the very best on your journey. Makwande.